Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome to the second hour of Up North News for this Monday, August 29th. Coming up in just a sec, State Senate candidate Kelly Westland will join us. She's running in the area that includes Ashland Bayfield, which... speaking of being the editor for Up North News, I spent the weekend editing a bunch of different feature articles that will go up over the next couple of weeks. We recently put up one about what to do if you're up in Ashland for a weekend. We just worked on one yesterday, posted it yesterday. Last minute getaways, if you've decided to do a road trip for Labor Day weekend, that one included Bayfield and the Apostle Islands. Hands down, one of the most gorgeous places on planet Earth, just not just in Wisconsin or any place else. And Kelly Westland gets to live up there. Morning, Kelly.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, it's a wonderful place to be. That's for sure.
Oh, it is. Kelly's just one of my favorite people. She worked for a long time for Senator Tammy Baldwin in a role that I had held just before her. We have known each other for the longest time, and I am so thrilled that she is running in the 25th Senate. It is 25th, right? I sometimes get my numbers mixed up, but it's great to have you here. Great to see you running. And right now you're heading into Labor Day weekend. Is that going to be is that more of a campaign weekend or a relaxing weekend for you?
This one's going to be a pretty campaign heavy weekend, but most of them are at this point. And especially as I'm kind of like keeping an eye on the calendar, we're down to 71 days, you know, so the time is limited here.
And you know, it's one of those things that got us through like med school and residency and then got us through campaigns is just to put the number in and go, I can do anything for 71 more days. You know? Right. And tomorrow will be like, I can do anything for 70 more days.
Right. But there are also a lot of things to do in those 70 days. So.
Oh, yes, there are. And you're doing it in an unusual district that is not as compact as it used to be back in the days when Bob Jauch was representing it. There's definitely been some mischief with it. So as I describe it to people, I would describe it to them as essentially a horseshoe. It's got the northern tier of Douglas, Bayfield, Ashland, Iron are all in there along the top. And then you go down to get all of Price County. And then along the other side, you get most of Burnett, all of Washburn and Barron. But in the middle, you only get a little top edge of Sawyer. I mean, you could put Sawyer and Rusk in there, but no, they decided not to. So you've got this unusual horseshoe-shaped district that you have to get around. And it's not something you can do in 20 minutes when you're up in that part of the state, Kelly.
No, not at all. But when you live in Ashland, you're used to driving about 3 hours for everything. So so we do have those two townships in Sawyer County, and it has all of Burnett now. So I've got all of Grantsburg and Dansbury and some of these great places further west, and just the teeniest, tiniest bit of Polk County outside of Turtle Lake. So, or in, I guess, all of Turtle Lake. So like maybe 10 or 12 folks, my guess is, over that line. But
And again, I want to emphasize for people, it did not always used to be this higgledy-piggledy. It used to be that districts were much more respectful of county lines and in keeping communities together. But again, when you're rigging the maps, as Republicans did in 2011, and again last time around, you can make a lot of mischief. And it makes it a lot harder, Kelly, for voters to know who represents them. And I'm betting more than a couple of times you've introduced yourself and people said, oh, wait, I'm in that district. I thought I was someplace else, or I don't know who represents me.
Absolutely. Well, this district used to include Lac-des-Flambeau, and that was one of the chunks of territory that they cut out to kind of make it a more right-leaning district than it used to be. And Burnett County for the last 10 years has been divided kind of right down the middle for assembly districts and for the Senate districts. So now they're all together, but it has shifted, you know, this whole region a little bit further to the right, but that's okay. I mean, we're just out talking to voters of every stripe, trying to win them over, and the Republicans have absolutely had a bit of overreach recent years, I'd say.
To put it mildly, yes.
Yeah.
Well, let's take the 2 minutes before we take our first break and learn a little bit more about you. Something that I've done with every candidate that's come in so far is just give us the short version of your own story, your background leading up to the decision to run.
Sure. Well, you and I have, like you said, known each other for a while. Back earlier in the last, I guess, decade, I served on the city council in Ashland, and I came up here to go to school at Northland College, where I got my degree in conflict resolution, skills that I I'm hopeful will be useful in the legislature, and have spent the time up here doing a lot of work around local food, renewable energy, that sort of thing. Ran for office against Sean Duffy in 14, which was another time I followed in your footsteps, Pat. Yes. And when that didn't work out, that's when I went to go work for Senator Baldwin. So for the last 7 years, I've been doing the work as her northern representative in all of this district, plus a few more counties. And when I found out that my state senator, Janet Buley, was retiring, it seemed like a good opportunity to step up and solve some of the problems I was seeing from my vantage point in Tammy Baldwin's office. But to I just knew that I had the skills to be able to do it. Northern Wisconsin deserves good representation.
And going back to before you decided to put down roots here, is it fair to describe you as a military brat?
Yes, yes. My dad was in the Air Force and my stepdad was in the Navy. And my mom worked for the longest time with the civil service at the Naval Weapons Station and then for Finance Accounting Service. So, yeah.
And then at some point you said, I like this place. I'm going to stay here.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have thought it when I first came up. I showed up here in January.
Well, that'll do it.
Over 20 years ago and was like, these people know it's really cold here, right? You don't have to live like this. But I've since acclimated. I do enjoy ice fishing, snowshoeing, those sorts of things. Married a local boy, and that helped keep me here.
That's how these things happen. I know. I met a farmer's daughter from Wisconsin. The rest is history. Kelly Westland is our guest here, state Senate candidate in the 25th District, Northwest Wisconsin. And we will continue our conversation right after this. You're up north. Westland joins us, candidate for state senate up in Northwest Wisconsin, who had earlier requested the Parks and Rec theme, and then Tom Petty as well. The things that lighten the load. Why Parks and Rec? What, just a favorite show, or did you relate to, a particular character, perhaps?
Well, I mean, you know, it came out, it was really popular when I was serving on city council, and it just hit home so hard in so many delightful ways, and sometimes infuriating ways, but it's one of those, if you can't laugh, you gotta cry. And, it hit me right in the feels. I love that show.
See, you got that. You got a nice, fun show, whereas I will forever be saddled as Ron Burgundy. But what can I say? I have many leather-bound books, in my library here. It's just
kind of a big deal.
I am kind of a big deal. That my staff in the Capitol really wanted to put on a coffee mug for me. So, and in fact, I have one that I'm gonna play show and tell later on. Kelly is running in the 25th District across Northwest Wisconsin. And obviously, as in talking to Jeff Smith the last hour, there's a lot we can talk about in terms of priorities. We tend to have a feel for what those are, and we'll certainly get into them. It is worth noting that your Republican opponent this time around is former Republican Assembly Rep Romain Quinn, who, if you look to see what, did he show leadership in this area or that area, I think it'd be fair to say, based on looking at conservation voters of Wisconsin and others, his leadership has been on fighting efforts to protect the natural resources that are so important to the Northwoods.
Yeah, and I think that is often an issue of local control as well. There are folks that I talked with in Washburn County, especially, who had done a lot of just citizen-led work to write a pretty comprehensive shoreline zoning ordinance. And there are lots of examples where Mr. Quinn has instead done the work to roll those protections back and make what should have been the floor of state level protection become the ceiling. So if you want to do a little more above and beyond in your own community, you're out of luck.
Well, you're in an area where you have the Enbridge pipeline project that's being talked about. You just have the mining proposals tend to come up, things that would really have a potential huge threat to the Bad River area and other parts. And whether it's Quinn in your part of the woods or Tom Tiffany was in when he was in the legislature and then Congress from the area, it sometimes astounds me the way that people will sell out their own natural resources for a quick buck.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's there are, again, some of these cases where it's pretty apparent to see the pay to play politics that happen when there's a donor that wants to build right down to the waterfront or who wants to, do some things that the neighbors are not really super excited about. And that's obviously, a problem.
Well, and so let's turn this back around then, because obviously there's a lot of people would want to push back and say, what's wrong with, you know, fighting for jobs and the economy and things. So, you know, it's fair to ask whether it's Kelly Westland or any other Democrat, what's the alternative to having, you know, a mine or, you know, unrestricted development in an area?
Sure. Well, you know, I think that first of all, it's a false dichotomy, right? You don't have to do this jobs versus the environment. It's not an either or, especially as we're moving forward now with the historic investments in things like clean energy and addressing climate change. There are a lot of opportunities to transition folks to good paying jobs that promote sustainability and help protect the environment. And, you know, oftentimes when these big extraction industries come into areas like this, whether it's mining or oil companies or a CAFE, well, a CAFE was less extractive, but it's more polluting. All of those things have, you know, serious, long-lasting negative impacts on the community and the environment and the short-term gain, you know, so they're externalizing a lot of the problems to the people that live here that maybe want the jobs now, but don't need to be cleaning up the mess a decade, you know, down the line.
Kelly Westland joins us now, state Senate candidate up in the northwestern part of the state, who I fear is under some kind of threat. We had Kia Vakil on a couple of weeks back, and his cat was going on a rampage at that point, and I was fearful for him.
So, did you know that's what was happening right behind my laptop? Of course.
I had a sense that there was, and I think in the Zoom era, in the pandemic Zoom era, mm-hmm. almost most of the time, unless you see a toddler or something, you can usually assume if it is a cat. If there's something that threatens to throw an interview into chaos, it is usually that. I think cats are just anti-Zoom. That's all I can figure.
So sorry, it's like they know as soon as I'm talking to another person who isn't physically present, that's the time to be disruptive.
Oh yeah, yep. That's totally the thing.
I'm gonna boot him real quick.
No, you go right ahead. I think that it's long past time that we just have an interview subject just up and walk out because that cat needs to go.
I'm so sorry. There you go. It was
no, close. I'm again. Totally good with it. As I pointed out last week on National Dog Day, team dog over here. So any chance I have to pick on cats, I'm going to completely do it.
I love pet dogs too. Actually, those are usually the more problematic ones. They'll bark at the stranger's voice in the house.
Oh, yes, that's true. Oh, don't get me wrong. I'm not taking dogs off the hook for anything like this at all. As we were talking about the economy and how you create jobs and such, it certainly does take me back to the fact that Governor Evers last week released a plan for the $5 billion state budget surplus that's out there, you know, thanks to his stewardship more so than anything the legislature's done because they haven't met. When you looked at that plan and anything else that you might have been proposing, what kinds of things jump out as being especially helpful to your part of the state?
So, I mean, up here, I've been talking to a lot of folks mostly about infrastructure investment, fully funding our public education system, making sure that we can update our wastewater treatment systems, as well as getting rid of lead pipes, that sort of thing. This stuff matters. And we have all of these rural communities. The Badger Bounce Back Program has been fantastic for our local businesses and our main streets, just because these kinds of investments don't come along very often, but we don't have a lot of options outside of, you know, these sorts of funding mechanisms unless people get really, really creative. And there's a lot of competition, right? So when we have these entrepreneurs that are able to fill an empty storefront and to build a new business and hire local people, that is really having, a larger impact in a lot of ways in places like this. We've also seen a lot more young people and women, folks of color that are opening new businesses up in northern Wisconsin, which is really, really encouraging because the old model of like attraction and retention, trying to get big box stores or, I don't know, Foxconns or whatever to show up and like solve your problems, that's not how we're going to address the real issues facing our communities. So this kind of supporting local people to build really important and innovative things in unexpected places is just a great step forward. And I'm really appreciative of all the work that Governor Evers has been doing. And you're right, despite the lack of legislative support. So,
well, it seems to me that what you get through, whether it's Foxconn or a great big mine or something, is this Hail Mary or swing for the fences approach rather than the things that happen one at a time, usually locally based, on main streets everywhere that are going to grow an economy more so than any one big project. And for putting themselves out as the party, you know, that's friendly to business, I guess I'm still a little surprised that is still the Republican approach, is to try to go for one big thing instead of supporting a lot of local things.
Sure. And that's, I mean, I know that the Bucks development wasn't something that's necessarily local to us, but it's something that is tangible, that is here today, that is employing people with good wages. And, you know, the guy that I'm running against, he voted in favor of Foxconn and against the funding for the Bucks stadium, which, you know, again, up here is not necessarily like the most popular thing in the world, but it's actually helping people in Wisconsin right now, unlike Foxconn, right? But we also have an economy here that's built in large part on tourism, on agriculture, on local food. And there are some folks that have been doing some really, really innovative things up here to make sure that we're building a stronger local food system that pays farmers, you know, family supporting wages, which is not something that's happening everywhere.
I think it's important to note, too, with the state support for building Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee, a lot of Democrats did support that. They caught a lot of heat, but they understood the dividends that it was going to pay, not just in the Milwaukee area, but that it paved the way for legislative support for similar projects, obviously on a smaller scale, but similar projects in hometowns all around the state. You see the Pablo Center in Eau Claire is a great example of that. That again, you know, these things, when you can create a big public space like in Wausau, for example, you're again growing your hometown economy, you know, by the roots rather than trying to transplant something big.
Right. Well, how do you convince somebody else to want to invest in your community if you're not willing to invest in it yourself? You want to have a good quality of life for the people that live there if you're going to attract more people. I mean, why would people want to move to a community that has crumbling infrastructure, nothing to do, no public space? You know, they've got to have things to do for especially young families and young professionals and for everybody, things that aren't cost prohibitive, things that are accessible.
Well, and that takes me to a story that we did a couple of weeks ago at Up North News about Boulder Junction and how this little community basically, you know, took the bull by the horns and said, we're going to be more aggressive about finding the types of funding and partners. And in doing so, and they were doing this before the pandemic, but certainly it was reaffirmed during that, is that if you're not growing, if you're not doing the things to grow your economy, you're dying. And they're now attracting people who can work from home without having to live in Milwaukee or Chicago or what have you. What is your hope as a legislator to help accelerate broadband development throughout Northwest Wisconsin?
Sure. I think that there are some really, again, innovative sorts of approaches that people are taking. I know that there have been several that have put at least like the base fiber, you know, loop within their given municipality, their town or their city. And that's something that if private partners want to come in and extend the reach of that, they're more than welcome to. But at the same time, they're giving a really solid base of access to the people that live there that want to build off of it. And I think of an example out of Spooner that I learned about when I was still working for Tammy, Mayana Chocolates. They were based in a brick and mortar shop in Chicago. And the story that they told was that basically when they, she was from, it's a married couple, and she was from the Spooner area and wanted to move back home. And when they uprooted their very successful chocolate business in Chicago to come back to Spooner, you know, there's this question of like, are we going to be able to still maintain, you know, the level of income? And with adequate internet access at the incubator there in Spooner, they were able to build their business to be a little more web-based. So instead of a brick and mortar shop in Chicago, it became a global option for people. And it's really good chocolate. So I don't know if you've ever run into it in a shop somewhere in Northwestern Wisconsin, but it's one of those things that opens so many avenues to economic opportunity. And it's not just that. It's also, medical care. It's emergency responders. It's school, it's education. It's so important. It's a critical utility that I would personally love to see expanded, kind of akin to the rural electrification programs. You know, I think this is something that is now, you know, so important that everybody needs access.
We've only got a couple of seconds left, so it's not fair, but I'll just ask it very quickly. But certainly the Dobbs decision, do you feel that that's not just going to be a motivating factor for women, but for people who are independent, self-styled independent voters, men and women, who are going to take on this issue as a step too far?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm hearing at the doors every single day. So between that and just overreach in general and protecting the future of our democracy, people are really concerned, and I think they're going to show up.
That whole thing about protecting democracy keeps coming up. It's like it's like it's an important thing or something like that. Kelly Westland, always a pleasure. It's so great to see you. Good luck with everything and stay in touch.
Yeah, thanks. Nice to see you too. Take care.
Well, and good luck with the cat. What's the cat's name?
Oh, well, that one was Olaf, but he's always a troublemaker. He's fine.
Good job, Olaf. Way to go. You're famous now for all the wrong reasons. Thanks, Kelly. Talk to you later.
Take care.
We will be back after this. You're up north.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
I'm kind of a big deal. People know me.
The movie was based on my life. What can I tell you? It's Monday morning. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow up here on Lake Wissota. Luke Mathers is manning the truckload of sarcasm down at our flagship studio. There will not be a rocket launch today, taking an uncrewed rocket to the moon as part of a new project. It says here that NASA's new rocket remained on the ground in part because of engine troubles that they were still trying to figure out. And yeah, you don't want to mess around with, you know, a liquid hydrogen line that could, you know, do bad things, shall we say. That part didn't bother me. I want everybody to be cautious. Obviously, this is a test, basically. This is not a small thing. So this is what bugged me when I was reading something earlier before they scrubbed the launch. Now, they did note that Vice President Kamala Harris and Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff were expected to be at the Kennedy Space Center Monday. That's fine. But it also says in this CNN article, appearances by celebrities like Jack Black, Chris Evans and Kiki Palmer, and performances of the Star Spangled Banner by Josh Groban and Herbie Hancock and America the Beautiful by the Philadelphia Orchestra and cellist Yo-Yo Ma are also part of the program. What? No. What? Why does everything have to be the Super Bowl halftime show now? This is, go ahead, Luke.
I don't know, but I find it funny that both your Jeep Wrangler and this rocket both had their check engine lights come on at the same time.
Oh, shoot. I still have to check that thing. Oh, yikes. Okay. Well,
I was going to ask you about that. You got home from your road trip and you didn't get it looked at? Come on.
Well, I just got, you know, got back, and then I was a hermit all weekend. I'm not going to take it to the dealership, especially for a check engine light, where again, it could be just the most minor thing, or it could be that it will try to launch me to the moon. You know, when it blows up, I don't know, but I'll get around to it. That's why I don't work at NASA.
One or the other. It's either just you just need a top off of oil, or it's going to launch you to the moon. Who knows? Right. It could be. Yeah. It could be both.
So I'll keep you updated, or I just won't be here at some point. But I don't understand why everything has to be a production. There was a good article over the weekend about how college football has become unwatchable, in part because everything has to be a big production. Every commercial break now has like 8 commercials in it and messes up the pace of the game. But you have this $1 billion or you have this several billion-dollar contract now for some of these conferences. And so everything has to be a production. You can't just sit and watch a game. You can't just test a rocket. You have to have Josh Groban there singing a song for something that might not happen. And it didn't. It did not happen today. I don't know where to blame this, but part of where I always will start a rant like this is when we started moving high school proms out of gyms and into, you know, halls, and then, you know, fancier halls. And then, you know, you had TV shows that tried to turn prom into a five-figure event for every family. And again, not everything has to be a big production.
Yeah, it doesn't, but my problem was in like a community center, like a giant community center, because it was just a big school. So the school gym that I don't necessarily think could hold us all, but I find that a fascinating thing, because it's something I've never thought about before. your correlation between this is that's about the time when it happened, when for me that was just prom. Like, I don't know.
Right. Prom is supposed to be something rather simple. But Grandpa's going to tell a story about his high school prom, because my prom entertainment was something no high school has ever had and nobody ever will. It was Florence Henderson, mom from the Brady Bunch, and Tennessee Ernie Ford, because our prom was held at the old Carlton Celebrity Dinner Theater in the Twin Cities. And yes, we had a side hall where some rock band was going to be playing, but you had dinner in the dinner theater. And so you got to see the first part of the entertainment. And so there's Mrs. Brady in a dress slid up to here and singing along with, you know, the old pea picker, Tennessee Ernie Ford. It was surreal to me enough on that note alone, but it was doubly so because I was there with the girl who had broken up with me a couple of weeks earlier, but we decided to go anyway because we'd already paid for the tickets and the tux rental and the dress. So awkward doesn't begin to describe how the night went. It was a short night. I don't even know if I saw more than 5 minutes of the band before we said, "You good? Yep, we're good. We've had dinner. We've used up most of what our ticket paid for." And away we go. So I didn't have the dream prom that you see on some of these reality TV shows. And frankly, it would have been a little better off being held in a gym.
I don't think anybody's prom is like what you see on TV or the movies. Those things are all just done up studio quality things for the movies.
I have to agree. I don't know that I've really talked to anybody that still looks back on their prom as being like the complete dream night. It was instead probably more of a hassle than it needed to be and more expensive than it needed to be. And I think that we should keep that in mind, whether we're talking about sports or launching rockets to the moon. Is sometimes it's okay just to have the event and just have it. Don't dress it up. Don't make it expensive. Just do it. Grandpa's done ranting about that now. There is a billionaire amongst us who we still don't know is a billionaire, and maybe that billionaire doesn't know that they're a billionaire. You may recall about a month ago that a Mega Millions jackpot of $1.3 billion was won by a single ticket sold in Des Plaines, Illinois. And yet nobody has stepped forward yet to claim it. Now, it's not unusual for lottery winners to take some time, get their affairs in order. You definitely want to do that when you're talking about, you know, $1.3 billion. But this is a little longer than usual for a winner to step up. And the winner has a full year to claim the cash before, you know, they lose it. I should have looked up how many times, and there have been some big jackpots that have gone unclaimed. You know, some people never knew they won or they lost the ticket, what have you. That would really be something if somebody had the chance to become a billionaire and they don't know about it. That tells me you just buy too many lottery tickets. I mean, it's special.
I'm just getting my affairs in order, Pat. It'll be one of those things where it dusts in the wind. As soon as I've got the private island purchased and all everything's taken care of, then just poof. That's the way I would do it. If I was gonna win, like you wouldn't probably hear about it. It would just be like, oh
no,
what happened? What happened to that guy? Oh, nobody really knows. Here's
what mutants my wife and I were once upon a time when we were relatively new in our positions and really liking what we were doing. We said, well, I mean, we would eventually stop working, but first we just kind of pare back because we're doing things that we love to do. We're over that now, where, again, we, like most people, would not even give somebody the courtesy of notice. There would just be, you know, that thing, quiet quitting, that everybody's talking about now?
I've seen, what is it referencing? Because I've seen the term quiet quitting floating around a bunch now. Is that what I just referenced? Is just poof, I'm gone?
Yes. Well, what it is people are feeling so overworked and so many demands are being placed on them that quiet quitting is the new label for doing the minimum amount of work required of your job and nothing more. So, you know, it's almost like it's not quite a sick out, but it is on par with, again, doing the bare minimum of what your job requires. And I love that at first it was this thing like, oh, what is happening? We're, you know, all business is going to suffer and everything as workers, instead of, they don't quit, but they really ramp down what they do. I've loved the pushback on the pushback. Yeah, they're doing their job. Instead of just giving away a bunch of your labor, giving, you know, so much blood, sweat, and tears at work, and you're not getting fully appreciated, you're not getting fully compensated. There is that continual push in some parts of the work world to squeeze more blood out of the turnip. And if you're in a place that, you know, you can maybe try to organize your workforce, that's fine, but most places can't, and a lot of people don't. So the fact that they're simply, you know, throttling back on, you know, the demands they're placing on themselves, that's not an unhealthy thing. You know, Luke, you wouldn't be, I wouldn't begrudge you if you walked out of here at 11:01 every morning and didn't do a thing extra, but we appreciate everything that you do. See, I'm coming back to last week's free breakfast story. I can't offer you free breakfast. So can I just compensate you in praise instead?
Oh, there's a lot still that's on my to-do list once 11:01 hits around here. So I understand that. It's the quiet quitting term. I guess I don't quite fully understand, but you're not quitting. I was thinking that all these
people
were
not quitting. Well, you're quitting everything that is extra that you were doing other than the bare requirements of your job. I guess I just see that as self-care, you know.
Yeah.
But maybe it maybe is, look, it's certainly passive aggressive, you know, toward your employer if you're not communicating with her or him that, you know, too much is being expected of you. And again, you don't have to. You could go to your boss and say, look, there's just too much here. You're making me do much more than what I was originally hired for. Because if you complain, you know, they could fire you. So you know, if you just kind of throttle back on your own and then somebody says, hey, you're doing less, you know, again, you're doing what is required of you. And that to me is a healthy thing. But this is from the guy who spent about 10 hours yesterday on a Sunday sitting at his desk editing various, you know, video stories and feature stories so that I wouldn't fall behind to start off the week. So I'm not really one to talk about quiet quitting. Not happening in my world anytime soon.
I think it is an interesting dynamic, though, because I think since the beginning of the pandemic, there has been a much greater focus on work-life balance. And because since we're all online so much now, and a lot of people do their jobs still remote. Like there was a large shift to remote work throughout the lockdowns and the safer at home orders and whatnot. But there's just a lot of people that stayed in that mode as well. And so it's hard sometimes to balance what a actual workday or a work week looks like with the fact that can be all online immediately. You can answer emails from anywhere now. You can log in and do a Zoom chat from anywhere. And so making sure that you strike a healthy balance, and for those that didn't do that as the shift stayed virtual for a lot of workers, I can understand the desire to kind of participate in a quote-unquote quiet quitting proposal, because if you're doing more and you're online constantly, you should be being compensated for what work you're putting out.
I do think the work-life balance, you know, probably gets dinged as a cliche, but I actually think that is a better way of putting it than, you know, this quiet quitting term that's going on out there. I have said previously that I have a great setup here. You know, I'm on the lake. I've equipped, you know, my home office with everything that I need to get things done. I can take frequent breaks to go, you know, fold some laundry or wash some dishes, or, you know, whatever the case may be, to the point where those couple of days down there in Madison last week, it was great to see you and it was great to see folks. I was spent. by the end of it, of actually having to like go into an office and then just focus on that for, you know, 8-10 hours a day. I think we've had some very healthy trends. It's sad that a pandemic had to bring it on, but if you can negotiate a work from home arrangement, and if you can do it in a way that doesn't, you know, break up your family routine, you know, if you can find that balance, as they say, consider yourself lucky. I certainly do. And that's part of why I probably enjoy these visits so much with all of you. More in our next hour. We'll be back. You're up north. That's still Monday morning, and it's still the 9 o'clock hour. I've been informed by Luke Mathers, producer extraordinaire. So I will tell you probably thought I was quiet quitting there, and I wasn't. Thought about it, but again, how great would just 10 minutes of dead air be? It's what everybody prays for about 6 past every hour here. But we continue. I noted that Congressman Mark Pocan, who has not been shy about the stakes involved next door in the 3rd congressional district, where Republican Derek Van Orden is on the ballot, who was present at the insurrection and has had numerous other incidents that his Democratic opponent Brad Paff has noted make him virtually unqualified to be in Congress. He is super qualified to be a member of a right-wing party, but not necessarily to represent the 3rd congressional district. And you heard Jeff Smith mention Dave Estenson before. And Mark Pocan this morning wanted to remind people that Van Orden was present on the Capitol grounds, was less than truthful about his proximity to the insurrection. And so Pocan again put up audio from Dave Estenson as he was walking toward the Capitol on January 6, 2021, to remind people of Van Orden's presence so close to the action. Let's hear that.
Yeah, I still have a ways to go to get up to the Capitol, which is where everybody's at. I got off the phone with Derek Van Orden. He and a bunch of his frogman buddies are on the wall over. They got a pretty good vantage point on the wall to the left side of the building. So that's where I'm aiming for. He said, come on up. We got a great spot to watch. So that's kind of where I'm shooting for.
And this is somebody who, you know, used in Van Orden, used campaign funds in part for the trip. So when people were donating money to his congressional campaign, you know, in 2020, turns out they were also funding his travels to what turned out to be an attack on our federal government. And again, that's not all. This weekend, we want to wish Derek Van Orden happy anniversary. 1 year ago, he was arrested and charged with trying to bring a fully loaded 9mm pistol through TSA and onto a commercial flight. That is the person who is a nominee for Republicans. But again, this is in keeping with what we've talked about this morning. In part, we told you earlier about how Representative Adam Nealon of Pewaukee said that the first tax break he might ever oppose is one that would waive state income taxes on forgiven student loan debt, simply out of that temper tantrum that they're having, that President Biden is forgiving a part of that debt, which is changing lives. It is such an economic boost, not just to households, but to local economies in doing so. And so I wanted to share with you an article written by one of my colleagues. Ty Rushing writes for Iowa Starting Line. You can find that at iowastartingline.com. I think IA Starting Line is the social media handle. And Ty is a brilliant writer and reporter. And he tells his story about the importance of student loans, even though it's going to put you so deep into debt, but it lets you dig out of the hole that, you know, you were born in through no fault of your own. He writes, depending on your primary news source, I'm either an elitist or one of the 430,000 Iowans burdened with a collective $13 billion in student loan debt who will have a portion of it forgiven by an executive order from President Joe Biden. Biden announced Wednesday that up to $20,000 in federal student loan debt will be forgiven for Pell Grant recipients, and you have to display exceptional financial need to receive one of those, and up to $10,000 for those who weren't quite as hard up. And let me note right here that the only reason I got through college was through Pell Grants, again, coming from an extremely low-income family. Ty goes on to talk about being, like me, the product of a single mom. He says, my late mother raised me for the most part by herself, along with some help from grandparents and maternal aunts. He says, I also have three fathers, which is something he'd never written about before until this weekend. His first stepdad, he grew up thinking was his biological dad, who spent most of Ty's childhood in and out of prison, battling various addictions. His second stepdad, who he says my mom met at work during my first stepdad's jail stints, already had three sons of his own. I wasn't exactly receptive to this guy who I thought was trying to replace my dad, but we're cool now. And he says, my final father figure is my biological father, who I met my senior year of high school. We too are super good now. Obviously, he writes, my backstory is complicated, but trying to explain how I'm related to someone via these three men requires a flowchart. And it does have something to do with student loans. He says, growing up, my mom usually had a full-time job, a part-time job, and side hustles, including making and selling custom gift baskets. Still, for years, we barely kept our heads above water, especially during her periods of unemployment. There were times we had to fill the bathtub with water before they cut off the water because of a missed bill. Sometimes in the winter, we slept in the same bed under numerous comforters because she couldn't risk running up the gas bill since we didn't have the money to pay. But even with all those financial hardships, not going to college was never an option for me. And I add parenthetically, me as well. The value of an education was something my mom instilled in me. She was the only one of her five siblings to graduate high school. She earned a few college credits while raising me, working multiple jobs and supporting an incarcerated spouse. He says, I was offered a scholarship, but knew that, you know, where he wanted to go, the courses that he wanted to take, meant that even though he was working a night shift, he had to transfer to a more expensive school. And therefore, he had to take out plenty of loans, starting with a $2,000 loan in the fall of 2008 that he paid off in May of this year, because of the fact that when you first start at journalism jobs, they are extremely low paying. And he goes on to talk about the second and sometimes third jobs that he'd have to have while establishing himself in his career, which in this case was journalism. He says, I'm not looking for sympathy. I'm doing fine these days, but I want to provide a face and a voice to the student loan debt crisis, which isn't unique to me or my particular circumstances. Even the Obamas didn't pay off their loans until just before they entered the White House. There are millions of people like me who couldn't get an education without putting themselves into debt. And as odd as it sounds, I tried to put myself into a manageable debt situation. Biden's announcement is a game changer for a lot of people I know. I can put payments toward my wedding and maybe actually get a house after 15 years of apartment living. So I'm pretty happy about Biden's decision, but I'm also just an elitist with three dads who couldn't afford a college and whose career experience as a journalist, primarily in rural Iowa, only recently surpassed my career experience as a warehouse worker, a senior distribution specialist, and a free sample hander-outer, if you want to be technical. God bless the people who know education is important, but God bless those who also want to support those who make it so and help us all have a better life. Back with more. You're Up North.